Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, it's Leave It In the Ring.
Welcome back to another edition of Leading Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. And we are back. We're back from our Andre Ward coma. You know, we haven't been doing the show for about 3 weeks. It's just all due to work here, man. I've been working these crazy, stupid hours. And today, finally, I was able to get here on time. So we can log in and talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring Radio. So let's get it in here. You can call in 347-215-7598, or you can tweet us at Leaving the Ring Boxing on Twitter or follow us on IG. Make sure you download the app to your phone so you can call in immediately, just directly from your phone through the app, and you can get on here live with us and talk some boxing here. Let's talk past week. This past Saturday, Bernarda Hopkins and Sergey Kovalev, they finally went at it. One of the most anticipated fights for the year to actually end this year, in my opinion. It was a big fight. It was a big thing. Some folks were writing off Kovalev. They didn't think that he was going to be able to bring what he was doing in the previous fights when he was stepping in with kind of, lower level oppositions. Guys were expected him to blow him out, but they didn't expect him to do exactly what he did to Bernarda Hopkins. You got a really crafty Philly guy. He's been around for how long? He's 50 years old. He's made power punchers look amateurs. He wasn't able to do that with Kovalev this time around. Kovalev, to me, showed he's a very well-rounded, educated fighter. He got in there. And I'm going to say this. I'm not sure if anybody was giving him credit about this here, Gabriel, but his feints is really what threw off Bernarda Hopkins. And Bernarda Hopkins is known to do a lot of feints and kind of throw off the rhythm of whoever he's going to face on the other corner. It was kind of reversed. The table had kind of turned on him where Kovalev went in there and knew that if he just made sure he could break the rhythm and not allow Bernard to make it his fight, he had it in the bag.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, people were just looking at the power punching of Sergey Kovalev. They were looking at the opposition and calling it soft. They weren't looking at his amateur background. They weren't looking at how talented the guy is. They weren't looking at how he was blowing those people out. They were kind of stuck in who he was blowing out. And I think that when you look at this fight, and you look at the way that Hopkins was dominated, and he's never been dominated like this. At the very least, he figured he would be a very tough defensive puzzle, to deal with, and that it would turn into a Bernard Hopkins fight, that you might be able to outwork him, but you wouldn't have an aesthetically pleasing win. And I think that Kovalev managed to do that as well. He dominated with the jab. As you said, he used the feints throughout the fight, and he was the one that was carrying around the hammer, in both hands. And I think Hopkins had to respect that. As much as he knows I don't get hit cleanly and I've got a great chin, he had to respect it. And when it was confirmed in that first round and he got dropped by a right hand by trying to leap in, do his typical low head, kind of come crashing into you, and Kovalev just glided backwards a little bit and caught him with the right hand, put him down.
Beautiful shot.
Kind of game over. Where were the other game plans going to come in? If they didn't include power, if they didn't include being able to, he tripped Kovalev in the third, didn't seem to fluster him, got up, knew what the deal was, kept going right back to the jab. And even, hurting
pro.
Hopkins
late
in the fight, he
stayed
patient and stayed behind the jab, stayed with his game plan. And, if the knockout comes, it comes. And I thought it was very smart. It was like the opposite of what Trinidad tried to do. Trinidad was like, when I land that punch, it's going to be over. And instead, Kovalev was like, look, I'm going to box. And if that punch lands, so much the better, and I'll take advantage of it. But until then, I'm going to just take something off my shots and mix it up and just box smartly throughout the thing. And I don't think he took
everything off his punch.
Really quick, Gabriel. It was a very masterful performance.
Hey, listen, really quick. I forbid you to ever bring up the Bernard Hopkins and Tito Trinidad fight ever again here on
Deep Ring
Radio.
I kind of wonder with him. You know, but I think this also shows, like, you know, when you get the elites together, it all, you know, it can tend to go towards the distance. It tends to become a closer fight. And in this, you know, what we saw was that when he finally faced an elite guy, he did get extended, but I don't think it was for lack of trying. I mean, it wasn't like Hopkins gave Kovalev a bunch of chances to counter and to knock him out. I think once he got knocked down, he did make a clear decision that, you know, being the first guy to take this guy the distance isn't such a bad feather to have in your cap.
Right. Can you hear me?
I think we might have lost Dave this early on. Oh. It's just kind of like, this is what happens when you've been out of the ring for a while. There's rust. You can get stopped early. I think Dave has been clearly stopped in his tracks. Could be
can you hear me now?
Thing. Call back.
Hey, can you hear me? Are you there?
The number to call in is 347-215-7598. If you're calling through Skype, it's going to be a 111 number, so you can tweet at us. Let us know what your prefix is or that you've been waiting online. And at Gabriel_Montoya or at 97Ruff. Or at LIITR Boxing. We're going to be going for the next couple hours, breaking down fights and talking about the weekend that was. I think, you know, the other fight that we have to break down is Saddam Ali versus Louis Abreu. Talking to Ben London, or at Ben London, or Ben Jacobs, a writer that sometimes writes for Boxing Scene. He covers things overseas. And it's one of my favorite writers out there in the sport of boxing.
Can you hear me?
Said that
can
he
you hear me
exchanged
now?
Some, with Mr. Abreu early on in the evening, and that he'll be moving up in weight, probably the junior
middle.
Hey,
can you hear me?
He looked like a guy in this fight that just couldn't pull the trigger. He kept kind of moving on Saddam Ali, who everybody assumed was going to get knocked
Gabriel,
out.
Gabriel, can you hear me?
I thought he was going to get beat in this fight as well, dropped a couple times and beaten
God
by
it.
Decision, I think was my pick. But instead, it was Ali's night. And
can you hear me?
He was just moving in and out beautifully, relied on his boxing. I mean, I think when you have a weakness like that, it makes everything else that much more attuned and that much more focused. And it showed in this performance. You know, he was Ali stayed behind the jab, you know, sorry, I'm trying to check in where Mr. Dave is.
Hey, I'm on. Can you hear me?
Ali, you know, he's a guy that he's not thought of as a puncher. He's only got 12 knockouts. So he's going to, you know, be looking to probably go the distance, or at least make it kind of an endurance test, have a high pace, get to your body a bit, pepper you with the jab, move in with the right, and kind of break you down over
so
the course of the fight.
Gable can't
what we saw
hear
here
me.
Was,
so me,
was
I'm
a guy
do
that
this
was sitting
here.
On his punches
I'm
a little
hang
bit.
Up on him. He can't hear what I'm saying. So let's see. Let's get him to call back in. I'm overthinking that nobody can hear me, but it's obviously it's him. He can't hear me for some reason. So he'll call back in a short bit here. Yeah, I want to point out really quick some of the stuff that this is great. You know, Block Talk, man, is just it's very comical here on Leaving the Ring sometimes. But we'll have Gabriel call back in. I didn't even know. Wow. Lenny, the Fight Smith, one of our writers for Leaving the Ring Radio, he just texted me. He's busting up. He's like, dude, we can hear you, but Gabriel can't hear you. All right, so anyway, Fight Fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Let me point out really quick about what something that Gabriel Montoya was talking about in terms of amateur background, where people are doing their fact check on that. I think a lot of people didn't even include the amateur background because of the fact that, you know, people go like, well, it doesn't really matter until you go in the pro rankings. And it may be so if it's an American fighter. A lot of times that amateur background really is not a big, big deal because they're not really going overseas. There's a lot of political issues in the amateur American games. But when you talk about Russia and you talk about Cuba, that's something completely different. You have to really pay attention to it because these guys are fighting world other athletes here. Hey, let's pass in some Fight Fans here on Leaving the Ring. Hopefully Gable knows that he's not on the air. He's probably just talking right now. I I just texted him right now. Let him know. He's got to call back in. Let's go with area code 860. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother?
Hey, what's up, Dave? CT, I just want to talk about the two fights that were this past weekend.
Go ahead, CT. Let's see what you got to say, brother.
Yeah, I was just really surprised the way Kovalev fought Hopkins. I thought he was going to fall for traps. I know last week I picked Hopkins to win, but Kovalev showed me a different dimension of his abilities. And I think a lot of these light heavyweights got a lot of respect for him now, seeing that he can definitely box the way he did. He controlled distance very well. And he set the pace from the beginning and mentally showed Bernard Hopkins, you know, usually – Hopkins is the master of mind games, where Hopkins went in for that left hook and Kovalev was able to instantly step back a little bit and time him with the right hand. And I think after that moment, then Hopkins knew what type of fight that he was in with. And I think he knew the rest of the night he was going to have a problem.
You know, the thing that Kovalev was doing, and I've said this numerous times, even with Floyd Mayweather, whatever opponent he was going to face, I always said that the biggest problem that I see aggressive fighters do is they overcommit. When Floyd or even Hopkins, when they walk themselves backwards to those ropes, it was a trap that they were setting, okay? Because they knew that you're going to throw the punch, you're going to overcommit, and you're going to fall in, and then they can get some work done in the inside. Or they were so what Kovalev, in my opinion, what he did was he didn't do that. He made sure that when he threw, he didn't overcommit, and he pulled back, you know, at least a half a step back just in case, because he also knew that Bernard would try to throw his right hand. And I think that's what really threw off Bernard Hopkins. And in that first round, too, that right hand landed. I even tweeted it. That right hand, when it landed, it was the right hand saying to the alien, take me to your leader. Yeah. And it was done. He was done. You know what I mean? In my opinion, I was talking to Gabriel off the air when the fight had, you know, finished, and I said, I told Gabriel, I said, hey, I think that when he was dropped, Bernard, the fight was left on the canvas. You know, yeah. I think that he had a certain game plan. The game plan was to tire out the bigger guy, but at the same time, be elusive, pick his shots, take away his jab, take away anything that he was going to throw, any type of combinations. But when he realized he was getting a guy that well-studied him and was an educated guy that understood that he had to be careful, knew he was the bigger man, but at the same time couldn't overload and throw out all his load because Bernard was there to take it. Bernard was in deep, deep waters with Kovalev, man. It was a masterpiece. I loved it.
Yeah. If I could talk about the Ali fight, I was very impressed with Ali. I thought he was going to lose too, but I was wrong with that one. He definitely impressed me. At first, I was saying that Ibrahu looked kind of, you know, weak. You know, he looked very flat. But then I watched the fight again. I think a lot of it had to do with Ali's abilities, his ability to move. You know, he set the pace, you know, slow pace the first couple of rounds, and then he just kept setting traps for Ibrahu, you know, using lateral movement, but using effective counter-punching ability. And his counter-punching was right on point. He's like, whether he slipped the punch off the ropes, he was countering off the ropes, and I like the way he feinted with the left hand and threw the straight right down. He knocked him down. He hit him twice with that same type of punch, first with the knockdown, and then the second time he did the same thing, and he hurt Ibrahu and then put him down. It was like, he fought very well. I was very impressed with Ali. I'm questioning to see who would fight next. I was thinking about, you know, because he's with Golden Boy, I would like to see him maybe against Robert Guerrero or someone like that.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to see that fight, man. You know what, Ali, I picked him to win. I put it on the Leaving the Ring website. That was my pick. I thought that Carlos Ibrahu, he's really wild. He opens up a lot. He's kind of off balance. He's a quirky kind of dude. He's hard to figure out sometimes. Ali stunk up the place, but the performance was forgettable, like I said on Twitter, but his knockout was impressive. You know, I even said Ali to me, even with his last fight, when he got hurt, he got rocked. Everybody was questioning that chin. But I said, hey, you could question the chin, but he definitely does have heart. You can't take that away from the kid. I thought he has a lot of heart. I think that he can do a lot, but he's going to be one of those Amir Khan type of figures here where he can get hurt at any moment and get dropped. It's what he's going to do after. Just like Amir Khan, he gets dropped, he tries to get right back up. Ali kind of shows that type of character in him. He may get hurt. He's going to make it exciting because you just don't know when a big punch can land on that chin and just turn everything around. So he's got a lot of work there himself to do. Whether or not fight fans are intrigued about to see him again right away, I'm not sure. But with that punching power, you know, because there's no denying it. He's got some thump in those gloves. I don't see why not. I would love to see him against Robert Guerrero, man. I think that's a great fight. A great fight.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about maybe, because I was on Instagram, and some people were saying maybe it's like maybe a Sean Porter next, but I think maybe Porter might be a little bit too much for him. I would like to definitely see him versus Guerrero, though, just to see where he's at. But he definitely had a great performance on that night.
Sean Porter, I think that's just too soon, too early. You know, let him stew up a little bit before we start throwing him in with the real wolves, you know. I mean, even Guerrero to me is a big step up, but it's a good step up because Guerrero's slow-footed. You know, he can be a one-track-minded fighter, but he's a durable guy. He's not a guy you're going to blow out of there really quick, you know. And he's a big test, in my opinion, in stepping up in level. After if he gets past Guerrero, then I say, yeah, maybe step up to Porter. But right now, too early, too soon. What are you going to ask me, brother?
I was going to ask you, did you hear anything about Cassie Duber did want to put Kovalev in with next? Is he going to fight one of his mandatories next?
I haven't heard anything back, man, to tell you the truth. I'm thinking this. I was telling Gabriel was, he said he's on hold. I don't see him on here, but I was telling Gabriel, you know, here's what's the interesting part. He doesn't have, their contract ended with NBC. So obviously there's got to be another option, or they got to start filling up dates if the only date for or only network they're going to be dealing with is HBO. So I'm kind of curious what they're going to do with him for 2015. I think it's still up in there. I think that's something they're still trying to figure out in terms of opponents and what they're going to do. They can always send him down where GG's been going overseas to keep him busy. And I think they are. They're going to keep him busy. They got to keep that brand going, not just kind of live off that one big victory over Bernard Hopkins. CT, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother. I appreciate it, okay? Thanks for calling in.
All right, thank you.
Fight fans, you want to call in, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. I'm going to see if my co-host is on with me here. Okay, Gabe, are you there, brother?
Boy, I was covering for you beautifully, man, when we got separated.
You know what? I was like, wait a minute, this is kind of funky because when you start talking about Bernard Hopkins, I try to interrupt you, and I was like, wait. I say, hey, listen, I forbid you to ever bring up Bernard Hopkins and Tino Trinidad ever again on Leaving the Ring. And then you just kept going. I was like, what the hell? Is my mic off? I unplugged it. I plugged it back in. I hung up. I called back in. And then Lenny the Fight Smith hits me up on text and tells me, you know, hey, everybody can hear you, but Gable's the only one. So,
well,
hey,
it's
it
really
was great.
Weird.
That was
yeah,
great.
I thought you were gone. I was just rambling. So I think I was making some fairly good points, however. Thinking I was, like, covering it all. I moved straight to the Ali fight. I mean, we basically can go home at this point.
throw down the mic and walk away, right?
I've covered it all.
Let's catch some fight fans here on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with area code. We got two area codes of 714. Let's go 714-305. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? 714-305, you out there? No. Okay, let's go with the other area code.
I tell you, that 714 number, they call into the next round. I think that's one of my friends back east, I use that term loosely, that hates me but yet can't stop listening to the shows.
Ah, well, we got another 714. 714, you out there? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring Radio?
There's two of them.
Yo, it's Lenny the Fight Smith. How you guys doing?
Yeah, that's
Lenny
the other
Fight
one.
Smith. There you go, what's brother.
Up,
what's going on, man?
Oh man, that was classic. I was like trying to figure out what was going on, and I thought Gabe was just being a jerk.
Hey, so did I. I was like, what are
you
doing? You
know, it's Dave.
Somebody said to me on Twitter last week after the next round, like, you're a lot funnier than I imagined you to be. And I just think it's funny that I think most people that they've people ask you this, like, I think most people think I'm just an asshole. Like, I'm just this rude guy.
You know what
it is, Gabriel? Character, right?
Gabriel, you know what it is?
What's that?
It's the haircut and the mustache now. That's what's throwing everybody off.
It must be. It must be. Yeah, I'm there for the Charles Bronson look, and it's just people are throwing it back. That's what
right?
It is.
All right, Lenny, what's up, brother? What's on your mind, man? Let's talk to boxing here on Leave the Ring.
Yeah, I mean, this is half boxing, half professional wrestling, but I gotta bring up. I apologize if you guys are gonna bring this up later, but Shannon Briggs is back at it, man, and I'm loving it.
Oh, dude, you know what? I mean, give him a TV show already. Let's put him on some type of network. Let's follow him with cameras. I don't see why nobody's picking up. You know, here's the thing, man, is that boxing is so rich with stories. There's so much stuff that either it's drama. You can get drama, comedy. You can get suspense out of boxing. It's the overall theater. You know what I mean? And nobody's jumping on it. You know?
Totally.
I'm sorry, man. You know, I'm getting texts and everybody's tweeting at me right now for a minute. But yeah, I agree with you, dude. I totally agree with you. I said give him the fight already. What are we waiting
for?
Yeah,
I mean, it's not like he's fought any quality guys in the last 5 or 6 years. But really, when was the last time Klitschko fought an interesting fight? I mean, when he fought Povetkin, but that was just like a hug fest, and it was just ugly. At least maybe Shannon Briggs can get in there and push him off of him and throw a couple punches here and there. It could be at least more interesting than what we've seen from Klitschko.
It may turn out to another hug fest. I mean, there's no doubt that Vladimir Klitschko is the more gifted, more skilled guy. I don't see him being taken out anytime soon. He's going to probably retire as the undisputed heavyweight champion. But at least we get to chant, "Let's go, champ. Let's go, champ." Along with him walking into that ring, that long aisle, allow him to have his moment. That's what I say. Allow Shannon Briggs to have that final moment to soak it all in, where he has every fight fan behind him this time around and wearing a "Let's Go Champ" T-shirt and hat. I say give it to him. You know?
Yeah.
But, hey,
I'm gonna be watching. I'm gonna be watching on Saturday just to see if Shannon Briggs can get into the arena.
Right. And jump into the ring or be on the other side in the other corner. You know, I don't know. But hey, Lenny, you got anything else you want to talk about here on Leaving the Ring?
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in and say something about Chavez. So now Chavez made it official, and he's officially part of the Al Haymon army.
Yep.
So we probably won't see him for another 2 years against Rod Salka, right?
Yeah, I mean,
he'll come back at heavyweight. You know,
he's gonna stay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't miss Chavez. I don't really care about Chavez. I never have, and I find it interesting. Like finally, like Steve this week was like, "Dude, I don't miss him." Like he said it on the next round, and I remember, geez, it was two. I'm starting to sound like an old cowboy. Like 2 or 3 springs ago, and it was Chavez was still on Latin Fury. And, you know, hadn't won the title. And we were at Ernie Gabillon's house watching a fight. And I brought somebody over, and Steve was there, and there's a bunch of people. And I just was, like, unabashed in my Chavez hatred. I was just like, you know, this guy is just – they're just – it's like he lives in a different boxing world than everybody else. He gets to be Chavez Jr. They're going to build him up on these pay-per-views because he has no amateur career, i.e. he kind of sucks. And they're just going to put him in with guys that he can beat. And, you know, there was even little fights where, like, I didn't feel that he won. Certainly one in particular that ended up being a draw, and then he had to do it again. He just kind of – and he didn't seem like he had that much fire. Never seemed like he was in the greatest of shape. It's like he made weight and worked out as a boxer and trained as a boxer. So he was in shape, but didn't look like he wanted to get after it, you know. And I just was like, dude, this guy sucks. He's a silver spoon. And Steve kind of kept arguing that this is, like, a necessary brand. And if it's good, it's necessary. But if it's just foisted on us, like, you know, guys that like Adrian Broner was kind of like pushed on his, he's the next one, this guy's the next one, and he had no substance. He's never going anywhere. He may be thrown in the mix of other people, and he's good for promotion. But Chavez Jr. falls into that. And, like, honestly, the longer he stays away from the game, you know, out of sight, out of mind, who gives a damn? He doesn't move the needle.
Hey, let me ask you this. Let me ask you guys both this, and tell me if I'm way off. But, you know, when you think of Julio Cesar Chavez Sr., and you think of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., to me, Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. is like the it's like a Nike brand, right? You go down to a great mall or something, and you buy the Nike brand. And Chavez Jr. to me is the brand that you buy at the flea market. You know, it's not even really Nike. It's like Bikey. So that's just the way I view him. Am I wrong, Lenny? I mean, that's just the girl who swamped me, and you pick Junior. That's what you're going to get.
What's the difference between Salvador Sanchez and Chavez Jr.? You know, is it – well, one, he's actually, you know, the son of, but a bigger budget? I don't know. I'm sorry, Lenny. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I thought Chavez – he had some skill. I agree with Dave, though. Like, he definitely was like a very, very poor man's giant version of his dad. With the kind of the style he fought, he would attack the body kind of like his dad did. But yeah, I mean, he definitely was a flawed fighter. I kind of on the whole branding thing though, I do like him for boxing. He's in kind of that super middleweight to super heavyweight kind of weight class where there really
he's
kind
the
of
super
a
super villain, dude. He's the super villain out of the Golden Finger from Austin Powers, Fat Bastards. That's who he reminds me of. That's the guy right there. He's the villain.
But here's the thing. You know, when people say he's good for boxing, what do they really mean? Do they mean he's good and that we have a good champion and that all the boxing fans have somebody to like? Or do they mean that this guy's so good that he's going to transcend our sport and get people in the mainstream to care about us? Because Kim Kardashian's
good for boxing.
Butt is more mainstream than boxing.
Right.
Just
the meaning of good for boxing, though, is that when somebody says he's good for boxing in terms of a business standpoint, he's good for boxing. Why? Because he's got a name that he's been riding on. And let's be honest here. There are 80, 90% of boxing is made up by casual fans. That's the reason why this sport is still around. This is the reason why this sport is still floating out in mid-sea. What direction are we going? Nobody knows. We don't have a compass on that ship. But that's why
he's good
for boxing.
He would have been good for boxing if – and that theory holds true. I mean, I think he'd have been great for boxing if he had a work ethic to go with his minimal talents. And he actually got some momentum going. Maybe if he'd even learned from his father and said, you know what, I could be bigger in the U.S. if I learned English. It just like De La Hoya understood that if I knew Spanish, I could appeal to two markets, not just one. And I could also break out into the mainstream. Chavez Jr. was never smart enough to realize those things, never worked hard enough to achieve those things.
He didn't have a good work ethic?
In theory, he's good for boxing, but in practice, he's barely good for the niche part of the sport, much less the mainstream.
Gabriel, he doesn't have a good work ethic. Have you not seen the kid eat? I mean, the guy can chow down. That takes talent. Hey, but let me tell you this here. It tells you more or less where Al Haymon is at in terms of if Bob Arum, who's been around for how many plus years, you know, 40 years or plus, couldn't get this guy honed down to finally go, look, I need to take this a lot more serious. I don't know what Haymon could obviously do. Obviously, he can bring more money to the table, but is that going to be the incentive to get this kid to get in the ring? Because, I mean, he got his biggest purse when he was fighting Martinez. He was offered a great purse fighting guys that, you know, he was scheduled to go up against, and it still didn't push this kid to go, okay, let's do this. It just tells me more or less where Al Haymon's head's at in the fight game. It's not...
Sure.
I remember so many folks used to say, well, he's got to be good. Al Haymon's got to be good for boxing. No, he's not good for boxing. He's good for fighters for a certain point. But like I said, the longevity of these fights, how much longer are fight fans, us, the guys, the consumers, are we going to continue to take? When are we going to finally get red ass about this and say, you know what, I'm not going to tune into this crap? You know, I mean, let's be honest here. I don't know about you, you or Lenny right now, but I'm at a point where, like, I can really give a shit what's going to happen next week or the following, because they've given us the middle finger for how many years so far? 2014 has been one of the most unforgettable years of boxing for the since the millennium started. It's just bad. It's really bad right now. Lenny, what do you think,
well,
brother?
You know what makes it worse, too, is a big part of the fun of boxing is the second a fight is over, figuring out what's going to happen next. Who's this guy going to fight next? What's the next big matchup? Now that Heyman's involved, it's gone, because you just know that nothing is going to happen. There's not going to be a Peterson against Danny Garcia. Like, that fight's just not going to happen. Those fights, I mean, at least not in the near future. So it takes that away from us. And that, I think, is what one of the worst things about the whole – and I tweeted the Heyman effect that he's really had on boxing.
Absolutely. Heyman's business tactic is the way Bernard Hopkins fights and the way Floyd Mayweather fights. You know, very cautious, doesn't want to take any risk. That's the same strategy. It's the same skill level these guys are both using, just that the other two are using it in the ring, where he's using it when it comes down to being business suave. Go ahead, Gabriel. I'm sorry, brother, for cutting you off. But you were cutting me off for like 50 minutes of the show, you know what I mean? Couldn't even get a word in.
I know, it's terrible. I'm all alone in the world. One of the times I've talked to Al, it was just, I remember he had Paul Williams. It was after, I think it was heading into the Margarito fight. I think it was the night of that fight. And it was like, what about, no, it was after, because Paul had won. And I asked him, you know, and it was with my friend John Novoselic. I think actually John brought it up and said, you know, what do you think about Vernon Forrest? He was a Heyman guy. And Paul Williams. And Al was like, that's a great fight. And John said, well, are you going to make it? And Al smiled and said, no. Like, and the way he said it was like, of course not. Why would I do that? And to me, like, watching him do his business, unless it's a mandatory, the rare exception with the Matisse-Garcia fight, he doesn't match his own guys. And it isn't good for the sport. It's good for Al, you know. We'll see where the sport is. I tend to disagree, though, you know, that the idea that we would have natural progressions without Al. I mean, I think Bob, it's interesting watching everybody fight, because Al wants a monopoly, and we don't know what he's going to do with it, but he wants it, because I don't think we're at final stage of where he's headed. I think NBC might be closer to that final stage. What if they all fight each other like the UFC, and we do get all these great matchups? If you think about it, like Main Events, Bob Arum, Golden Boy, Gary Shaw to a certain extent, Lou DiBella. Those guys all still operate under the old model, and Don King too. That they just kind of work, you know, they work until they have like the best possible guy, and the sport kind of revolves towards that guy. Everybody wants to fight that guy, and then it maybe moves towards somebody else. But it's an open free market, and they want it that way. But why do they want it that way? Well, one, when look at how shitty the state commissions are, how things are swayed in terms of the judges towards the lead promoter most of the time, or the A side, or both. The fighters don't have retirement. They don't have health benefits. Drug testing is not up to par with the other major sports that are, you know, have exceeded us in popularity, but not in how long they've been around. All these things, I think, are byproducts of the fact that the sport stays fractured. So I think as reporters, we should keep reporting the facts, but we should be open to the big picture rather than condemning it as we get to see a little bits more of it. You know, I don't want to be Kevin Ioli, where one week I'm defending Kung Lee for just looking good in the gym, and the next week with zero proof besides, you know, a screw-up from the UFC, I'm totally condemning him and reversing my position. And then maybe I'm switching back when the evidence suggests otherwise. I don't want to be a spineless guy like that. I want to see the big picture. And then draw it in there. And what if Al ends up being good for the sport? What if they end up with universal health care within the Al Heyman boxing organization? You know, who knows? We'll see. Right now, it's not looking so great, but we'll see.
Really not. Lenny, you got anything else for us, brother?
Nah, man. Thanks, guys.
All right, bro.
Thanks, brother.
Let's get you back. Oh, thanks, bro. Let's keep going down the line here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Let's go. Area code 347. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
What's up, guys? This is Mike from Queens.
Hey, what's up, man?
How you doing? I know they announced fights for December 20th on Showtime, that they're in the quadruple header. And if you noticed, all those guys are Al Heyman guys, but they're also using Goosen Promotions for that. And with Dan Goosen's passing, do you think that, like, Al Heyman's basically going to use Goosen Promotions as his own stable now? As his own, like, how he used Golden Boy in 2013, he's going to use Goosen Promotions now?
Oh, he was using them before. I mean, Paul Williams was with Dan, and you know, he was the Heyman guy. You know, that relationship goes back, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I think Al goes where he can go, you know, what suits him. That's where he's gonna move off to. So it's not really that surprising, but that's a good question. It's a good observation. I tend to think that if he's working like, you know, say Lou DiBella and Jermaine Taylor, and a lot of people were slagging, myself included, Lou DiBella for allowing, you know, Taylor to fight again, you know, after he'd dropped him. You have to realize that, I mean, he's just kind of being the front guy for Al in that situation. That's who he's with, and that's the relationship, so they just move forward. And it's been the biggest open secret in the sport of allowing Al to kind of use your promoter's license, and you take the, you know, the flat fee from Al and like lie to yourself that you're actually the promoter when you're not. And they're not. You notice those guys aren't spending like an extra amount of money to really promote and really put it out there. They say like, we don't have to really have the budget, but it's also maybe you don't really have the incentive because you're getting paid either way, you know?
Yeah. I was just wondering because I saw it said it's a Dan Goosen Promotion or Goosen Promotions, and I thought, oh, the guy just passed away. How could it be a Goosen Promotion, you know?
Well, but, Goosen Tudor, you know, there was he as a partner as well. So
right.
I think also the kids are taking over the business, and they're not letting it die with Dan, which is great.
That's cool. And also another thing, I noticed that they had Brian Jennings in the crowd this on Saturday night, and they show him and whatever. And then I'm with a friend. He goes, oh, when Brian Jennings fighting again? And I tell him, oh no, he's gonna wait to fight the winner of Stiverne and Wilder. And then he goes, oh, when are they fighting? And I go, it's not scheduled yet. And my friend looks at me like, what? Like, is that the dumbest thing you've ever heard? And I go, yeah, it is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. But to put the Brian Jennings, he sounds like he thinks he's like a mastermind or something. You know, it's just ridiculous to me. I don't know about you guys, but it's just ridiculous.
It's a joke, man. There's no substitute for fighting. You know, Brian's a guy that's still developing.
Yeah.
And I know you don't want to risk your position or whatever, but, I mean, there's such a thing as betting on yourself. And it's also like you don't fight, you don't eat. I mean, I guess he has another job, and so he's doing that. But, I mean, speaking as a guy that, you know, I've spent a lot of time trying to do, you know, work in theater professionally, and there's times when I have, and there's times when I've had to have that other job. No one wants that other job. Like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
But I don't know. He must be, you know, a mastermind on the side because this is the weirdest thing in the world. It's like the riskiest proposition. I'm trying to think of like a metaphor in my mind, but I'm like, I can't think of anything weirder than what he's doing.
Yeah, it's just insane. And there's so many fighters are just being managed the wrong way nowadays. I know I'm just a fan. I'm not a manager, but it's just like, when is Danny Garcia going to fight again? Like, what? Keith Thurman, he only fought twice in 2014, and Brian Jennings, and Mikey Garcia.
I mean, I have to say, well, yeah. I mean, with him, yeah. I mean, I think he doesn't ultimately want to do this for a living, wants to do something else, but, and it's showing. But yeah, I think with Garcia and a lot of the Heyman guys, and Steve and I have talked about this, I think they're waiting it out. I think they're looking to be on NBC, and but hopefully something really good is coming out of that deal. But you know, there's only so many. What's only like four of those dates a year or something? I mean, there's not that many dates. So, dude, there's eight dates. I mean, it's still a lot of dudes fighting for them every year. I'm curious to see what the real plan is. You're right. I mean, if the Heyman fighters, it's been the year of inactivity.
Yeah, it's just all. And all these guys, not like these guys are old. You know what I mean? It's just Osaka. I mean, he could have fought 3 weeks after if he wanted to, and they just decided not to. It's just ridiculous.
If you really look at how things are now even done, I mean, look, there is no incentive. I mean, Al Heyman's coming along, or other managers coming along, saying, "Hey, listen, I can get you this X amount." And if a fighter was to say, "Well, I want to be a Hall of Famer." All they got to do is go, well, why don't you look at Prince Nassim Hamed. He's being accepted. What has he done to be a Hall of Famer, to be an inductee into the Hall of Fame? The biggest fight that he was supposed to win against Marco Antonio Barrera, he lost. So if that could tell you that you have a for sure way of getting in, regardless of who you fought and what you've done in the sport, why not take the other road, which is get paid a lot of money, don't really risk your title, don't really risk the challenge, and you could still be an inductee and be called a Hall of Famer? That's the route these guys are doing nowadays. It's kind of sad, but that's the truth.
Yeah, and these guys, they all say, oh, Al Haymon, because he takes care of us, he gets the money. But besides Floyd Mayweather, who has he made a pay-per-view star? You know what I mean? Who's made more money than – has he ever had a fighter make more money than Miguel Cotto has throughout his career? Or De La Hoya or Pacquiao?
Let me tell you this. First off, Al Haymon didn't make Floyd Mayweather a pay-per-view star. It was Oscar De La Hoya that did it. I agree with you. I agree with you all the way, man. He hasn't shown us he's able to develop a fighter yet. He hasn't showed us that he could develop a fighter which going to carry off into the sunset. There's going to be longevity with it. He hasn't shown us any of that. I mean, he's in quite, just like prospects that we see right now in the sport. Al Haymon's resume is in question as well. How good is he? We don't know yet. And what he's been showing us, he's been being overprotective. He's being real scarce of what he wants to do next. It's not very good. Anyways, Mike, thanks for calling in, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay?
All right, have a good one, guys.
Fight fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. We'll give him a little bit more about. I saw that with Dan Rafael. He was all, you know, kind of jumping up and down and trying to get Prince Nassim Hamed. Now, let me tell you this. I like Prince Nassim Hamed. I like them as a character. But when we talk about, I don't know how you feel about this, game, but when we talk about how do we rate somebody to go into the inductee of Hall of Fame, are we rating them on what they've done in the resume in terms of fights, or are we rating them of what character they're portraying outside the ring, walking into the ring? Because he had this persona, that's what it was, this real outbursting persona that we all enjoyed and liked. I liked the fact that he was a villain. I liked the fact that he was very cocky. But if you break down his resume, there's really nobody there of significance where you could say, dude, this guy belongs definitely in the Hall of Fame. And that goes back with what fighters are doing nowadays. They see this. They don't think that fighters are stupid. Don't think managers are dumb. You know, if they could convince you sitting across saying, hey, you can do less risk. You don't have to do what Alexis Arguello did. You don't have to do what Salvador Sanchez did, Roberto Duran, Leonard, et cetera, Hearns, and all these other great fighters. You don't have to do any of what they did. Because the for sure fact is that you could do a bare minimum and you're going to have people induct you into the Hall of Fame. What route would you take if you were a fighter? You take the route, which is the one that's being paved right now, that's made boxing kind of a joke. Literally kind of a joke. Gabriel?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the legacy to me of Hamed. I also remember, like, him, you know, when Emmanuel Stewart joined the team and there was a post-fight interview, and Emmanuel had his arm around Hamed, and Hamed, like, shoved him off. He was like, man, get your hands off me. And it just was really rude to him. And I never forgot that. That's before I ever met Emmanuel. But it was just, you know, that's Emmanuel Stewart. You don't treat him like that. And I remember my brother and I watching that and being really pissed and being so happy when Barrera beat him. But correct me if I'm wrong, but Morales was the guy he was supposed to fight, and he picked Barrera instead. And most people, I mean, I think myself included, expected Barrera to lose that fight, that he was, you know, just coming out of a bunch of wars, it's a little more shop-worn. He wasn't put there so that he could beat him. And, I mean, it was certainly going to be a test, but many people thought the punch of Hamed was just going to be too much and that it was just going to be lights out, especially if Barrera decided to trade. That's what he was there for. Instead, he put on a master class of boxing. And then Hamed fought one more time. He said he was fine. He fought one more time. He never fought again. I don't see how that's Hall of Fame worthy. But,
no, and he keeps saying he wanted a rematch with Barrera. You know, I think people forget that he jumped over Eric Morales because he felt, you know, I mean, his justification was saying that, well, Barrera was the, you know, he was the winner of that fight. But what he saw when Barrera fought Eric Morales, and that's what I was going off of, he saw a very stationary guy that was coming forward and willing to take punishment to land punishment back. And that's what he did when he fought, when Barrera fought Eric Morales. So he looked at Eric Morales as the more mobile guy and Barrera the easier target to hit. It all went to crumbles. It all went to shit. Let me be honest with you. When he got in there, and it went to shit for everybody. Everybody thought that Barrera was going to put a valiant try. He was going to get in there, do his best, but he probably would get knocked out. Why? Because we had felt he was over the hill. But he changed the game on everybody. Went in there, used his jab. He fought intelligent. He gave him angles, head movement. He did everything that Hamed was not expecting. After that, he said, I want a rematch with him. You know, he fought a great fight, but I was off. He had so many excuses. Now we're 2014. He's one of the ballots there to be an inductee for the Hall of Fame. And I just say, like I said, nothing against him. I like the persona that he had. But is that enough to be an inductee in the Hall of Fame? I don't think so. I think, and let me tell you this, he stole the character from Jorge Paez, the Prince of Boxing. Now, Jorge Paez, you look at his resume, it's far more rich. It's far more packed with names there that you could say indefinitely this guy belongs in the Hall of Fame. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here. We can talk Bernard Hopkins, Kovalev, Ali, Abaragu, or let's talk about the inductees that are in ballots right now, like Prince Namsim Hamed. Am I off the chart here? I don't know. Am I way off in what I'm thinking and saying? I don't know. You tell me. Let's go with area code 951. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? 951, you out there? Okay, no answer. Let's go with area code 915. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? No? He just hung up. Okay, again.
Knocked on school.
951, you out there? No? Okay, well, let's just keep going here. Area code, you guys want to call in 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Going back, man, going back in this whole inductee thing, you know, and I, like I said, that, I think that's one of the big issues here. It's an overall what's going on with our sport. It's an overall of what we're looking at, what we're seeing, and how things are just changing. And when it's changing, honestly, within the 10 years from right now, it's been changing, God, too much. It's just way too much. I mean, where I don't even know sometimes if I want to call it my sport anymore, Gabriel.
Yeah, it's strange. You know, it's changed over the last few years. You know, over the last 10, 20 years, it feels like, I don't know, you know, like when we grew up, it was kind of like, you know, the beginning of The Godfather, where everything's perfect. And, you know, Don Corleone's at the height of his power. His daughter's getting married. He's, you know, granting all these favors, and he's just the man, you know, and everything couldn't be better. His son's a war hero. He's found somebody to get married to. He's not in the family business, and, you know, he might achieve his dream of finally going legitimate. And now it just seems like, you know, it's like years later, and we're in Godfather 3 territory, and maybe talking about doing it as a miniseries or on Fox. It's not the same product. They aren't the same kind of fighters. I mean, every once in a while, you'll find somebody that's cut from that old cloth. But even, you know, Hopkins, as much as we'll laud him, I mean, he kind of was at the old school in that he really picked and chose who he was going to fight, when he was going to fight him. Kovalev, I mean, you got to give him props, though. I mean, he's fighting Kovalev. He doesn't get more dangerous than that. And he bet that this guy would be too inexperienced. He'd never gone the distance. If you're going to get Kovalev, now is the time to do it. And certainly not after beating Bernard Hopkins. But, yeah, I mean, you look at it, that whole Roy Jones era, I was never a Roy Jones guy. Just like I was never a Hamed guy, it seemed to me that, yeah, they're kind of these amazing talents, but they were generally, you know, put in with guys that they were supposed to beat. There was nothing very exciting about that. Dariusz Michalczewski was a guy that sat out there, and people forget about him. And he did end up losing, you know, to somebody who was kind of quote-unquote lesser than Roy Jones. Roy Jones had beaten in Gonzalez. But still, Roy didn't go out there and take that out. It's not the same thing. Sort of like when Virgil Hunter tried to justify not fighting Butte when, you know, Butte lost to Frotch. See, that's why we didn't fight him. It made no sense to me. If it was that easy, then you should have just gone and done it in Montreal. And boxing fans might have a different feeling about Andre Ward. Except, you know, now him and Virgil Hunter act like they know best. And where are they? You know, in oblivion. Or Bolivian, as Mike Tyson would say. So, yeah, I don't know, man. It is a different sport. You know, where are the Titos? Look at the run that Tito went on that last, you know, heading up into Bernard Hopkins. All the top guys that he fought. Just no fuss, no must, no bullshit about negotiations. No, you know, weird, you know, demands. Leave your promoter and sign with me or any of that. Just got it done. And that's how stars are made, you know, and that's how the sport never been better, man. When Tito and Oscar were fighting, it was so easy to get a fight party together, or even Mike Tyson. But even more
right?
So, it was like Oscar and Tito. So easy, dude. Oh, they're fighting? You want to do it at my house or are we doing it at yours? You know, it was awesome. It's not really like that anymore. Oh, Mayweather's fighting? Well, who's he fighting? Is that guy any good? He beat him before. Nah, I'm good, bro. I'm good. I'm staying with my wife. You know? That's pretty much it.
Are you here like, it's boring. He's boring, dude. I don't want to watch that.
Boring.
It's the cliche now. It's like, he's boring. I don't want to watch that, you know? And, you know, I think that we hold on to that small little thread. We're hanging on that thread there, hoping that it's finally going to just kind of change and go back. I mean, here's the problem is, too, is that when we see one thing fixed, like, for instance, the Cold War between Top Rank and Golden Boy, it finally looks like it's stalling out. We're going to see some better fights. But then another door opens. So you know that other door that's been open, which is the Al Haymon factor, that we're going to be now excluded from those type of fights. So we leave one Cold
right.
War to walk into another one. It's just, it's like it's a revolving
Steven
door. It never ends.
Yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off. Steven Espinosa and Oscar, that looks like another war happening there, right? They see my face to date, and they're all angry at each other. They're not, you know, calling them gay or anything, but it's just like they're taking those, like, they're smiling in public, but they're just taking vicious shots at each other. And you know, Oscar kind of like saying, nobody's watching Showtime kind of a thing with his tweets. And you know, dude coming back with shots of his own. You're right. The more the sport moves on, I mean, it just stays exactly the same.
I tell you what, and I think we've seen the sport change so dramatically, so quickly right now, is because of the internet. I mean, think about it here. Steven Espinosa, if there was no Twitter, if there was no social media, could these two fellas here see this right away? The talking behind the back is now exclusively for the internet. You see it all the time. You see somebody's real personality come out in an internet. I see all these tough talk kids on the internet 24/7, knowing damn well that if they were in front of that person, they probably wouldn't say as much as they had on their mind. Take that away from Steven Espinosa. I think that they could be able to work something out. But now that it's out there for the whole world to see, I think it's a lot harder to kind of roll a Band-Aid over a small wound. What do you think? I don't know. Maybe I'm going crazy here. I'm looking at the internet right now.
I agree, though. No, things have changed differently, definitely, since the internet has come into play. I mean, I look at before there were so few news sources, right? You had CNN come into it, and all of a sudden we had 24-hour news. And so the news cycle changed and it accelerated. But back then, you know, back in the day, you know, the days of like Murrow, Walter Cronkite, people like that, where you really felt, you know, you had to, their integrity was on the line with every word that they spoke. It doesn't seem that way anymore. People can get things wrong. Like I saw in Kevin Ioli's article today about Jesse Vargas and Roy Jones training him. Doesn't mention that strength coach Memo Heredia is working with him. No mention of it at all. Vargas tweeted out a photo, or actually Memo tweeted out a photo of him with Jesse Vargas, you know, and dude's totally ripped, you know, and I'm not saying anything, but I'm just should be mentioned. But, you know, here's Kevin, who used to go, went toe-to-toe with Memo on you know, back and forth in an interview, doesn't mention it at all. Things kind of become part of the landscape. It's like Memo's become part of the landscape. It's, nobody really argues about it. You know, people try to go after Conte, and they forget, like the guy who had people tested. But they also don't stay on him when his guys aren't tested. They didn't follow up on this story where Vargas said he was in VADA, but he's not actually in VADA. He never was. He's talking about it, but everybody kind of lets the threads go. Things top to bottom have changed. You know, the more channels, you need more fighters. They don't, and there's more options, so they don't have to fight each other. You can develop a brand on its own, and it can be weak. Just like you look at the media, and there's just so many competing websites. Everybody's putting out their opinions. There's so many opinions. It's hard to tell what matters anymore. Who's important? You know, and then with the stories. I mean, like, look on Facebook, dude. And how many times you see some. You know, this story is amazing. You know, what happens next will blow your mind. Who writes these things, you know? And boxing media seems to resemble that.
Right?
To me.
You know, I don't know.
I called it on the show today. It's the best trained monkey in the world is boxing media. Look at him talking about Mayweather Pacquiao today. Yeah.
I don't even pay attention to that anymore, man. You know, I honestly, the way I look at things is this. You know, we get a lot of mail here on leavingtheringat@gmail.com. I mean, and some of these things are like, what do we do? Like, what is one thing that we could do about fighters that don't want to fight? And I'm like, well, for one, don't pay attention anymore. Make it seem like these guys don't exist. You know, and the less you mention them, the less you talk about who they're going to, you know, why they're not fighting, blah, blah, blah. Because they've already X'd themselves out. They've already put the big X across their face when they decide they're not going to take on real challenges. When they decide, I'm not going to get in the ring, I'm going to wait 4 to 6 months, or I'm going to bypass this fight because the purse is just not right. I say, then do exactly what they're doing to their career already. You X them out. Forget about them. Because they're forgetting about us, the consumers. The guys that actually pay for their brand-new car, their brand new belt, because let's not forget, they got to pay these sanctioning fees. So if they got to pay these sanctioning fees, where are they getting this money from? You, the boxing fan, the hardcore boxing fan, the fool that decides to stick his hand down his pocket and dish out your hard-earned money. You know that money that you do for 8 hours? You know that money that you have to go and work for to pay your own bills, that money that you have to save so you can have a little extra with the overtime you're putting in so you can have entertainment, that. So treat them exactly the way they've been treating us for how many years? Like they don't exist. Fight fans, this is Dave Duenas here on Leaving the Rings Radio with my co-host, Mr. Gable Montoya. We're going to end the show. It's a short but sweet one here on Leaving the Ring. We're going to be back next week with some guests and some interviews. We just wanted to make our return and make our presence that we're still alive. We're here. We're out of our coma. And we're going to be back at it again. Have a good weekend. Don't drink and drive because, you know, hey, you will spill your beer. You have a great night.
Peace.